Extension number 17437, Reel 2.
Mr. Bromley, Reel 2. Now, before we go on with your rescue from the sinking of the Mohawk, I think there's one or two things that you missed out from your earlier service in the ship.
Ah, yes. And that was during the raid by the Fleet Air Arm on Toronto. That's well documented. While this was going on, we were one of four destroyers with the cruisers. We went up raided the Straits of Oronto off Valona, and we met a convoy there. We attacked a convoy of four merchant ships and their escorts. The escorts escaped, but we got the merchant ships. While this was going on, the Fleet Air Arm were attacking Toronto. That was well documented, that attack on there. We come as far as that during that period of time we done a lot of bombardments on the Libyan coast, and particular one was the support of Tobruk. That's before we were sunk. We got the battle honour for that, the Tobruk relief of Tobruk.
Was the Mohawk a happy ship for?
Yes, it was so much. Pardon me. It was so much so that all the survivors that we now meet when we hold our reunion in Birmingham, have all said it was a happy ship. They were happy with it. It was a happy ship. It was discipline, but it was a happy ship. We go back from the time from when we were sunk, came back to Malta, and I was sent at St. Angelo, which was the naval barracks then in St. Angelo. And lo and behold, after we got kitted up with what kit there was there to have, I was detailed to go across to the customs steps and man a twin Lewis machine gun. We were issued with a greatcoat, a whistle. We had to make sure we had a watch on. And by the side of this machine gun was a telephone. And the binoculars on the was on the stand, which you had a plate below giving you the degrees, 0, 360 degrees. And the idea was this, that they were dropping landmines at the time. And what we had to do was to focus with the telescope, with the binoculars, onto the landmine, take a bearing and write it down, then phone the bearing through to head HQ, Naval HQ. We had some heavy raids, and once or twice it opened up with a machine gun. One particular incident was this Junkers 88 coming at Dennis Raid on the south of the island and came across Baraka Gardens. And I had a clear view then of what's happening. I opened up and saw the traces, which I thought were going, but didn't see any smoke coming out. This was a nighttime raid. And that was the only particular instance in Malta. I stayed there for a fortnight, manning this machine gun. Then I was transferred to HMS Juno, was on the way back to Alex. And on board the Juno were some survivors from the Mohawk. Well, we got back to Alex, just outside of Alexandria.
This should be April 1941, by
the way. Yeah, yes, after 41. We were sunk in April the 16th, and this was after our sinking.
So and probably into May 41.
Yes, and we went back to St. Angelo and then back to Alex and on the Juno. And just outside the harbour, the Juno had contact with the with a submarine, and the action stations went for a submarine, and obviously all the passengers, which were the Mohawk crew, went on deck to see the action. And I was on the port side, and the throwers, which throw the depth charges from the side of the ship, the one on the starboard quarter exploded in midair. Now, this was a terrible thing. The shrapnel flew everywhere, 750 pounds of TNT. And one of our lads caught it. His name was Soby Watson. And He got very badly wounded. We carried him down below, and we laid him on the into what was then the boys' mess deck, and we laid him on the side, and the sick bed attendant said, I was prepared to go and leave, and he said, stay here, son, and put your hand on that wound. And it was later on, when I became a first aid, in years later, did I realise what it was. It was the bubbling from the wound, and it was the lung. It hit his lung, you see. So I held my hand on it while he attended the other wounds. Then he said, all right, remove your hand. And he bandaged him up, and we carried Soapy down onto the launch, and that's the last we saw him, until years later. Another incident happened. I don't know whether you'd be interested in that, would you?
Yes.
Well, I came back from I'll go back just a little bit from here. Where I went on, I was drafted to HMS Jervis, an evacuation to Crete. And we landed on one of the bays and that, and took a lot of the army off and took them back to Alex. And then I left the Jervis and came back to England. And I came to Portsmouth Barracks, and I was put into a mess, and went into the mess and was having my midday meal, and one of the regulars said, what ship, mate? And I said, Mohawk. Oh, he said, we had a chap called here called Soapy Watson. Did you really? He said, yes, Soapy Watson. But my God, he said, what a lad he was. He was a captain of report. So I said, well, what did he do? What did he do wrong? Well, he said, he came in there and they gave him 3 weeks survivor's leave. And they told him that this was on a Friday, that he could go across, get his money, get his travelling warrant, and the next day go on leave. Or go on leave straight away if he could. And now Soapy went across to the pay office, which was manned by Wrens, and I probably was late in the evening, probably about 5 o'clock, I think it was. He went in and he said to the Wrens sitting at the desk, I've got survivor's leave, I can go on leave, I like my money, you know, me paying that, back paying that, you see. She says, I'm sorry, we're closing up. She says, don't you know there's a war on? So Soapy blew his top. So he swore at her, and he lifted up his shirt, and he says, what do you think this is? And there's all these shrapnel marks, right across, red raw across his back, where the shrapnel had gone in. And I think the Wren started to cry, and a woman officer came across and put him in the captain's report. So on the Saturday morning, so he went on to report, and the master-at-arms read out report, and the captain, like he always does, said, well, what have you got to say for yourself? So Soapy explained in detail and lifted up his shirt and showed the skipper. Showed the captain of the barracks his wounds and that. So the captain turned around and said, right, case dismissed, send this man on leave. And I was to meet him years later. I remember years later, and I was telling him about the Mossam, you know, 4 years ago. But when I did meet him, we went up to stay at him the weekend. And I said to him, how's the wound in your back, Soapy? Put one out of my kidneys. How do you know about that? And I said, well, I had to put my hand on it, hold it, stop the blood from coming out. Well, I never, he says. And you know, that was a little story, which was, yeah. I qualified AA3 at Whale Island. And somebody who was well known to AA gunners, very strict on that. And came back to Portsmouth Barracks. And then I was drafted to the HMS Panther.
Were you yourself in the evacuation from Crete?
Yeah, it was on the Jervis. I was on board the Jervis. I had to make up a number. They lost a man through sickness, and being in Alex without a ship, they drafted me to the Jervis. So I was on the Jervis for the evacuation to Crete.
Can you describe what you remember from the Crete evacuation?
Well, not a great deal. It was dark. And they lowered the weight of the motorboats and went inshore and took the troops off and brought them back on board and to get away as quick as you possibly could. There wasn't much to it, really.
What condition were these soldiers in?
It wasn't till the next day, really. It wasn't till the early morning he started to get trouble from the bombers, the German bombers. But we were fortunate and got away and got away back to Alex. But we never made another run back. We got back to Alex and dropped our troops, got the troops.
Did you have much contact with the soldiers aboard?
Did have
much contact with the soldiers aboard?
Well, no, not really. No, we were at action station all the time. They were down below and they were giving them food and coffee and one thing and the other, and sick bay attendant attending the wounds. So we didn't really. I mean, we were at action station, full action station all the time. Right until the time we got back to Alex Hall, got out the range of the bombers.
How frightening were the German air attacks on the Jarvis at that time?
They were very scared on us, but they caught other ships which had taken soldiers off, had been bombed and sunk, and other ships had come and taken off survivors and the soldiers that were still in the water. But that's a story I can't relate on because I wasn't there, but it's documented in the history.
How did you like being aboard the Jarvis as compared with the Mohawk?
It wasn't the same. In fact, quite truthfully, I was only a short period of time, on the Jarvis, got back to Alexandria, done some patrol up near Haifa and Palestine, but I hardly knew anybody on there, not so much as I knew the men on the Mohawk, because I was only a short period of time. You've really got to be on the ship quite some time to get to know everybody, their ways, their habits, and something about them, you know. No, I didn't. I can't remember to this day anyone I knew on the Jarvis.
Sorry, you were talking about when you returned to Britain, being at Whale Island.
Oh, Whale Island, yes. I picked up the Panzer. The people, I was an AA3, and my station then, being an AA3 gunner, was on the pom-poms. And the Panther left for the Far East. We went down to the Canary Islands, down to St Helena, down to Cape Town, Simonstown, and of course to India, which was Ceylon then, which is Bombay and Calcutta. But the base was Trichomalee. Trichomalee was the naval base then in Ceylon. And our job then was to engage the Japanese fleet if we possibly could at night time, because the Japanese weren't very well acquainted with the nighttime actions. And the next thing that came through was we were attacking Madagascar, taking Madagascar. So we were a large destroyer, so we were often or not with the aircraft carriers and the cruisers and the battleships. They're quite a big destroyer. And we went into Madagascar when it fell, and I think it was a place, Jackie, was it? I'm not quite sure that was the name. But
no,
we went.
That's Corsica.
Hmm?
No, that's Corsica, not Diego Suarez.
Oh, yes. Yeah, that's Corsica, isn't it? That's where we were later on when I was in the commandos in that Corsica, Jackie. However, we went into and we landed a party ashore to round up some Vichy French, but never came across any of them at all.
Did you go ashore yourself?
Yes, I went ashore, yes. We went ashore and we saw a pile of arms and we were ready to dive in to get some souvenirs, and the petty officer stopped us. He said it could be booby-trapped. And so we left them alone. But we went through the field searching. The fields were full of watermelons and peanuts and one thing there, all laid out to dry. We took some back on board. Then we left. We left there, went back to Alex Allender, and then I was drafted back to England again. I came back to England, and we called in at Durban on a merchant ship, I think it was Polotsky. It was a Polish ship, a 16-knotter. And we went down to far as Durban, and we picked up 300 Italian prisoners of war from Eritrea to bring back to England to work on the farms and that, to relieve a lot of the men to go in for forces. And on the way back, we had to stand guard over them. And I remember whilst I'm standing guard there one night, and an Italian corp came up and was talking to me. And he started to teach me English, Italian, and I started to teach him English. So by the time I left the ship and got back home to Liverpool, I knew quite a lot of Italian, was able to converse and make myself understood. Plus the fact that we had three Italian waiters waiting on our mess deck, And so we learnt all the table technology there, the forks, the spoons, the knife, the butter, the sugar, etc. And that, that helped a lot. When we got back to Liverpool, I never knew where they went to, but I went on leave, and I was living down at the time in Midhurst, a place called Stedham, a little village about 2 miles from Midhurst, with my parents. And he was a baker, the village baker. And I used to go into Midhurst, catch the bus, a Tuppy ride, I think it was, into Midhurst. And I went in there one day, and I saw a Tommy, a British Tommy with a rifle on his shoulder, with two Italians walking by his side. And I thought, oh, must have a prisoner of war camp here somewhere. So I followed them, and there was these Nissan huts with the lines of barbed wire around it, and the huts. So I went up to one of the Tommies on the gate, and I said, these chaps been here long? He said, no, he said, they only came in last week, about 300 of them. I said, good Lord, that's funny. I said, the very chaps that I brought, you know, I stood guard over and brought them back from Durban. So I said, do you mind if I talk to one of them? And the chap taught me Italian. So he called Italian across, and I spoke to him and asked him for Giovanni. I can't remember his real name, Giovanni. Which is Giovanni. And he went off and found him and brought him back, and we shook hands and asked him how he was getting on that, and he'd been treated well and one thing and the other. And he said, yes, he's quite happy, waiting for the war to finish, they go back to Italy. But it's strange that they should end up in just a few miles from my village, you know, the town. Then I came back, had me leave, and then I went back to Portsmouth, Pompey Barracks, and then I was drafted to Wayline for AA2.
What is AA2?
I call it A2, it's three stages. AA3, which was the lowest work rate, AA2 next, and AA1 was the highest. And you got extra money for these badges and that, extra rates of pay, huh? But I was AA3 on the Panther, and then I was on the came back to England to qualify at Way Island again for AA2.
This is AA anti-aircraft?
AA anti-aircraft, second class. I think we would call it second class. And when I was at Way Island, and my biggest dread then was I was ready for a draft shit. There's one thing I didn't want to do. And it was to be drafted to a battleship or a cruiser. I just could not stick the discipline after the free and easy that we had on the destroyers. Because really, the destroyer men were something like the fighter pilots. You couldn't put a fighter pilot and a bomber, he wouldn't feel at home. And the same thing with a destroyer man, to put him on board a cruiser or a battleship. And I dreaded this. And it was one dinner time, was having a meal in the mess deck in D block. And the tannoy came over. Do you hear there? Volunteers wanted for special duties. So I immediately thought, well, when he announced that it was preferable unmarried men, I thought, well, this must be something great. I'll get into this. They'll say me being drafted to a battleship or a cruiser. So I rushed down to the Martyr Arms office, and I was first in the queue. And by the time he'd come to check us all, there was about 20 or 30 of us. Well, when he started at my end, he said to me, name, rank, number, what's your gunnery rate? I said, AA2. I said, sorry, mate, he said. We're concentrating on ACAC on the ships, he said. Well, look, seeing that you've volunteered and you're the first one down here, I'll put you down. I said, well, thanks, Chief. So he put me down. And 2 days after, the tannoy again, and the names were read out, to report down to the Martyr Arms office. We went down to the Master Arms office, and we had to return all our equipment, alone bedding, gaiters and rifles and that, because they formed, at Wayline, they formed a bit of a naval brigade in event of emergencies, drilling on the parade with rifles and packs and gaiters, and they had two or three small field guns there. And return all our medical report, doctors, dentists, and got our books stamped and everything, and next thing, was that we were told that we'd be called the following day at 12 o'clock midday, report down here with your kit bags and hammock and everything, which we did, and we were transported down to Portsmouth. And amongst our lot was a couple of petty officers and leading seamen and that, and we asked him, what were you volunteered for? He said, it's an idea, mate. He says, I volunteered, but I don't know what I volunteered for. But he says, we've got to go up north. So we caught a train and we went up to Glasgow. When we got to Glasgow, the regulating them, transport people up there, we asked them, reported to them, and asked them what we were. He said, what number? Because we were given a number, 526 or whatever it was. And he said, no, mate. He said, I don't know what you've volunteered for. And he said, you've got to go now to Gourock. And you go across to Dunoon. So we got to Gourock and went across to Dunoon. We got the other side of Dunoon. And, I'm missing out here. Because we went to Arden Chinney, which was the commander training base. What pier was that?
It sounds to be like January 1943.
Yeah, 43, that's right, yes. Let's see where we were now. When we arrived at Dunoon, a lorry met us, and we said to the lorry driver, where were you taking us, mate? He said, I hadn't the faintest idea. He says, I've never been to this place where it is before. It's called Arden Chinney. Never heard of it. He says, stone barracks, you know. So after winding through the mountains, we eventually arrived at Arden Chinney, right on the seashore, a little bay, off Fastness, the submarine base. And there were all these Nissen huts. There's a salt course there. And when we pulled up, we dropped the tailboard down, we all jumped out. An officer came bounding down the steps from one of the huts. And he had a khaki uniform on, wearing a green beret, and Royal Naval Commander flash on his shoulders. So we thought at first we were just a working party for this lot, you see. So our PO said to the Wassim, we told the report here, so any idea what we are, what we've volunteered for? Oh yes, he said, you've volunteered for Royal Naval Commanders. But first of all, we've got to sort out the men from the boys, and then you'll go to Acna Carry, the slaughter schools they called him then. It's much tougher. Well, we've done a lot of training. At Inverary, we picked all our khaki gear up, and mess cans, gaiters, and tins, steel helmet, and the rest of the army gear, and put our naval gear into the kit bag and sealed it up and put your name on a tag, and that was it. We were in the army, boots, gaiters, the lot. And we started our training on the assault course early in the morning and that, and the rest was documented. We transported to Acna Carry. Well, after they sorted out the boys from the men, the rest were sent to Acna Carry to finish off our training up in Scotland. And we arrived at a little place, what's it called? A little station near Fort William. And the outside, we got all our gear off. Small kit bag that we had then, and we made our way to the car park, and there was one lorry there, one army lorry, and a regimental sergeant major came across and said to us, where's your commanding officer? So we pointed to him, that's him over there. So he goes, of course, give a nice smart salute, and said to the CO in charge, will you have your men put their luggage, please, onto the lorry? And then form your men up for marching. So the officer turned around and he said, well, where's the lorry for the men? Which he replied, there is no lorry for the men, you will march. And it was about 5 mile march. Well, we marched down to the Acna Carry and into the campment, and our commando training started from there. And it's a rather long story, really, to go right through that. We beat the assault course by trickery. The Marines held it, and we beat their... The assault course, by the way, was a 5 mile job, not like they are today, about a couple of hundred yards in length. It was 5 miles across the Scottish mountains. And they had every obstacle they could possibly go, the arrow pointing away, and you had to go. And it's very exhausting. Anyhow, we bit of trickery, we beat the Royal Marines. They never know that, how we'd done it. Beat their time over the course.
What was the trickery? What trickery did you use?
Well, they sent it off in batches. You were so many to a batch, say 15 to a batch, and they were called A, and off they went. And the interval was given of 10 minutes. Then the next batch, which was B, was sent off. Well, we did, we changed over. And the PO said, right, when you come back, you're not A, you're B. You see, so the result was that our time was very, very fast. And they wanted to know how we'd done. We told them, we'd tell them after the war, I'm over a pint of beer at the nearest pub. We'd done it. However, the training there was quite, I remember every bit of the training there. And it was very, very funny at the time, but it's a rather long story.
Well, I think we've got the time, if you...
Well, if you've got the time, yes. We used to, in the mornings, we used to re-valley, the bugle re-valley, we used to get the morning and put on our boots and gaiters and trousers, bare to the waist, towel and your toilet bag. And we used to run down to the riverbank where there was tables with bits of mirror stuck on them and an enamel ball. And along the pathways, you only had to, on the path, there were hurdles, and you had to jump these hurdles. And many of two came a crop of dead on the hard cement paving. We got down to the tables, took the bowl, broke the ice on the water, took it up onto the table and shaved, clean shave, then got back to the hut. And when we got back to the hut, the bugle went again for PT, and we still had trousers and gaiters and boots on. We went down to the parade and we'd done PT with the telegraph poles, exercising and all that. Then we went back to the hut, dispersed, went back to the hut, put on a complete uniform, and then waiting for cooks at the galley. And before I go any further, the beds, what we had were four planks, wide wood, four boards, wide wood, supported by 4x4, piece of 4x4, and three blankets. And the pack, the large pack we used for a pillow. The bugle went for the cooks the galley. We went down to the galley, still running all the time, over the hurdles, down to the galley. Got into our mess hall. And we were sitting there and got all our porridge, which was one of the main course, porridge. No smoking allowed, nothing like that. No beer allowed. And bread, porridge, mugs of tea, or coffee, cocoa. And we were called to attention. We had to sit to with arms folded, and the corporal on the end of each one of these tables stood to attention. An officer came in with a regimental sergeant major. And with the army, routine and discipline was different to Navy. And as they walked in, came along to the first table, which was army men on there. Any complaints? The corporal said, "No, sir, no complaints, sir." Very well, they carried on the next one until he comes to the naval table. Now, in charge of our table was a corporal. He stood up. "No complaints, sir." Two badger at the end of the table said, "Hold on a minute, cock." He says, "Hold on a minute, what do you mean no complaints?"